From KLCC Studios, this is Oregon on the Record.
I'm Michael Dunn. Today's show could be titled Local Boy Makes Good. Jake Swanko was a journalism student at the U of O and started out wanting to be a writer. But when he got the chance to hold a camera, his path moved towards film and through some luck and skill became attached to a project that would ultimately win an Academy Award for Best Documentary Film, Icarus. Today on the show, we talk with Swanko and learn about both his career and the process of making a documentary film that ultimately shined a massive spotlight on doping in sport. He's made a sequel to his film, and we talked about his recent screening for U of O students at the Eugene Art House. That's next on Oregon on the Record. Making a documentary film can be a lot of work for little reward. For former U of O journalism student Jake Swanko, his film Icarus was a tremendous amount of work, but was rewarded with film's highest honor, an Oscar. We talk to him now. Jake Swanko, a former U of O journalism student who was part of a team that won an Oscar for a documentary for the documentary Icarus back a few years ago, and has released a sequel to that heralded film. Jake, great to talk to you. Thanks so much for coming on.
Thanks so much for having me, Michael.
Yeah. Gee, when you were a student back in the day at the University of Oregon, did you want to become a documentary filmmaker? Was that something that you aspired to?
Well, I went to school as a journalist, and I wanted to write. And at the time, the school was undergoing a transition to include a lot of different media, seeing the curve in the road ahead, that a lot of these new platforms would be taking on multimedia. And so I was fortunate enough to have professors like Rebecca Force, Michael Warner, and Mark Blaine put a camera in my hand, teach me how to tell stories with all forms of audio, visual, technology. And I think kind of around my senior year, I started making my own documentaries, and I saw a really pivotal film for me, which was the film by Sebastian Younger and Tim Hetherington called Restrepo on National Geographic, which was a really big moment. I looked at that film and I said, I want to do things like that. And then that's kind of where my career took off. I had direction, and I started working in documentary before I left college.
Okay. I always think that cinematographer is the type of profession that many of us think we understand, but we may not exactly. So I want to hear it from you. Describe what the role of cinematographer is, especially with regard to documentary filmmaking.
Well, in regards to documentary, and there's kind of a distinguishing between fiction and nonfiction. In documentary, there's a much more kind of proactive approach in informing the story you're telling, because a lot of times you may not be working with a director, or you may be the only person that's let into a room, so you end up directing a lot of the scene yourself. But essentially, a cinematographer navigates the entire business of making the pictures of the movie, which is a huge part of the movie, right?
Mm-hmm.
And with that comes an entire team that falls under the purview of the cinematographer or director of photography, and to help light, to help camera motion, and to help with the technical sides of the camera. So in documentary, it becomes much more dynamic because of cinema verite, and cinema verite is really a fancy word for shooting off your shoulder and running around like a madman. In those moments, there's a lot of free will to find what's interesting in the frame, in the live action, and the real situation that's unfolding in front of you. So in a lot of ways, you become a cinema verite cinematographer, and that you're kind of following action as it goes, and you're picking the things you find interesting. You're focusing on little idiosyncrasies of people, and it's really that's kind of the craft of cinema verite. And then the directing of photography for interviews is more like what I had previously mentioned, where you are working with a large crew that is helping to create the image that you need to have created. So a cinematographer takes on a whole bunch of different hats, and in documentary, the cinematographer could wear all hats. You could be the sound guy, the camera guy, the director. And in a lot of instances in Icarus 2, I played all three roles because of my ability to only be the sole person in the room with Dr. Gregory Rodchenkov.
Let's get into that, because I want to first, let's talk about Icarus, of which you won the Academy Award as part of this team. And I want to ask you, how did you get involved with that project? And for people who don't know, it was a very important film that really exposed what the Russian government was allowing with regard to doping and performance-enhancing drugs and athletic competition. How did you get involved with it?
I worked in Los Angeles on a couple of productions when I just came out of college. I was fortunate enough to work with HBO documentary films, and I got to meet some contacts and producers there. And then I basically went off to New York and I started a career working for myself. And I took a trip to Ukraine and during the invasion of Crimea, and I shot for myself, by myself. I maxed out my credit cards. I went out there. I took a big shot and it ended up working out. I ended up working for PBS Frontline while I was there. And that was kind of a big moment in my career. And so anyway, people saw that I was doing things and people saw that I was taking risks. And, you know, when people see that, they recognize that. And somebody called me up, one of the producers I had worked for in LA, and they said, "Hey, there's this guy that wants to make this movie about doping in sports, and he's going to move out to Boulder, Colorado in a week, and he's going to be there for 3 months and he wants to start making this movie. Do you want to go shoot it?" And at the time I was 25, 26. And I go, you know, sure. Let's talk to him. Let's see what this is all about. And, long story short is I ended up on a flight and landed in, Denver, Colorado, and this guy picked me up with all of his possessions in the back of his car and said, "Let's go start making this movie." So that's how it started. And so just through one connection and through the next led to the opportunity, unbeknownst to myself, that would be the opportunity.
Yeah. Let me reintroduce you to the audience. We're talking with Jake Swanko. He is a former U of O journalism student who was part of the team that won an Academy Award for the heralded film Icarus. And boy, talk about some of those challenges, because obviously, you know, many in the sporting world didn't want this story to be told. So talk about all of the different things that you had to do to be able to tell that story to the world.
The story of doping in sports is a very inconvenient truth for a lot of different organizations and spectators ourselves, right? You know, there is an expectation that when we watch the Olympics, that we will see unhuman feats, and we'll see world records broken, we'll see heroes made, and those heroes become what they are from fractions of a second. And it's an immense amount of pressure to imagine, you know, winning a bronze medal and then living in the, you know, back of your car homeless for, you know, years as you try and struggle as an Olympic athlete, or those fractions and seconds going into positive and you becoming a gold medal winner. And I think to answer your question, you have to look at how much pressure this is putting on athletes to gain those fractions of a second. And from there, you know, doping in sports is kind of in a whack-a-mole position where essentially it appears that they take and martyr one particular athlete, say a Barry Bonds or a Mark McGuire, a Lance Armstrong, and they basically splay this person in media. They expose the huge scandal, and it's kind of regarded as anti-doping's working. And the fact is that Lance Armstrong was tested thousands of times, and he never had a single positive drug test.
Indeed.
And so what ultimately got him was, you know, an inside member of his team coming forward and telling the whole story. So I think we really wanted to understand how the system was broken. And there's an unfathomable amount of money and power, and as you see with Russia and other countries, a sense of nationalism related to Olympics and the sports that they host. So there's a lot more riding on it than surface value, right? So we unraveled that in a lot of senses and tried to understand why this keeps happening and how, if we're really serious about clean sports, how does this keep happening?
And you make this film, and it's rewarded handsomely. And as I said, you won an Oscar for it. But I'm also curious about, it changed for a lot of people the way that they look at sports. It was part of a trend of uncovering how much was going on. As a documentary filmmaker, winning an Oscar has to be amazing. But was it also gratifying because, again, it opened a lot of people's eyes?
You know, it's rare to make a film or any piece of artwork or media where people engage with it in such a way that it potentially has the discourse behind it to change something. And, you know, that's ultimately the goal of any documentary that's, you know, surrounding a scandal. And the fact that it created such immense pressure on the International Olympic Committee and the other anti-doping apparatchiks was really profound. But, you know, ultimately, all we really sought to do is tell a personal story about two guys that met each other. Both were kind of, if you look at it from this perspective, in the middle of a midlife crisis. This guy is going to try and dope himself and make this documentary. And this other guy he meets across the world is in the top ring of the anti-doping in Russia. And he wants out, and he's in a midlife crisis, and he's tired of doping all these people, and he's tired of living this lie. And these two people meet each other and start this journey. And that's ultimately what makes all of these really inconvenient truths much more approachable. And you know, this hero's journey or this buddy story that unfolds. So I don't know that those inconvenient truths would really found the legs that they did unless it was wrapped in a really good story, which it is kind of an unreal, hard to believe story that all this happened. Yeah. Which is, when you're making a documentary, is the absolute pinnacle of the craft, is when you're making something that's so strange, it can't be true.
Did you always know that you were going to extend this story and make a sequel?
I think as soon as we finished it, we just knew that there was a story that hadn't been told. And the journey of someone who discloses a massive truth and has exponential consequential effects on all forms, and then has to go in hiding for fear of their life, is not really a story that it's often told, nor do people usually get the privilege to be a part of that journey because it has to be so secretive. And we saw an opportunity in this period of time where Gregory wanted to stay not completely secluded. He wanted to be in security, but also wanted to make his voice still relevant in helping the anti-doping, correct and right the wrongs of the past. So we saw this moment where this man was under this intense transformation of really going from Dr. Gregory Rodchenkov to a non-person, basically coming to the United States without an ID, without any form of identification, without an insurance card, without the ability to get medicine he needed, without basically an alien in this country, and trying to start over and trying to find his way. And, following that journey to us was of tremendous interest. And, we had also developed a personal relationship with the doctor, and we wanted to continue to tell the story because it truly was a fascinating story. And just to sign the final note on this, on why we made it, is every screening we went to, no matter how complex the questions about anti-doping, so on and so forth, there was always the question of what happened to Dr. Gregory Rodchenkov. That's the question that always was in every single screening of the film. And so we sought to answer that.
Yeah. And you did a screening locally at the Eugene Art House earlier this month. Talk about how that went and what were some of the questions and comments that you got from people here locally about this international film.
Yeah, it was really great. I mean, essentially, we were able to have all these school, the School of Journalism, and other. I mean, it was a completely packed house. Also, the Art House Theater is really a great place to see a show, and the movies had a very limited release. We've premiered it at Telluride several years ago, and we've sought to continue to tell the story and add scenes, and are revamping to have it released this year. But it was really magical. I had some of my old professors in the audience, as well as just their constant sort of insightful questions from students and faculty that was really really amazing. For lack of a better word, it was really a lot of fun, and we and an important discourse on journalism and telling stories, and it was special. It was very special.
Jake, my last question for you, taking off from that, obviously, the disciplines you studied, journalism, documentary filmmaking, some of the subjects that you've covered, a lot of that is, for lack of a better phrase, kind of under attack these days. And I wanted to, the truth in some ways is under attack. As somebody who tells powerful stories, sometimes on uncomfortable subjects, What do you think is the role of the documentarian, of the journalist, you know, going forward when, let's face it, a lot of them from the highest office in the land are often derided?
So, you know, every time I'm at the School of Journalism, I look at this quote that's on the wall from Orwell, and I think we're all waiting for Orwell to cease to be relevant, but he seems to be only gaining with relevance in our society at the moment. But it says, "It's certain that literature is doomed if liberty of thought perishes." And I always think, I think a lot about George Orwell, and I also think a lot about the truth and what we prize in our society. And it feels a lot like we're edging towards a totalitarian sort of style of government in this country. And also just the willingness, the complicity to not speak up. We need young people more so than ever. You know, this is why I go and speak. And this is why I go talk to inspire. I mean, I can't imagine trying to become a journalist in this age of that we're in. And so that's why I go to the school to speak, to help lift people up as much as I can, to provide sort of my own truth and what my career has been like, but to inspire the next generation to go out and seek their own truth.
Good enough. Good enough. Jake Swanko, he is a documentarian, won an Academy Award for Icarus. Icarus 2 is being screened. It'll be released later this year. Jake, really appreciate your time. Thanks so much for talking to us.
Pleasure to talk with you as well.
That's the show for today. All episodes of Oregon on the Record are available as a podcast at klcc.org. Monday on the show, you'll hear about efforts and plans to try and replace cahoots in Eugene. I'm Michael Dunn, host of Oregon on the Record. Thanks for listening.